Well, let's dive into HB8, which is probably not a very sexy thing to a lot of listeners, but I know it's something that you've given reports probably the last 12 or 14 months worth of a Board of Trustees meeting, because this is something that's changed the world of funding for community colleges. And let's kind of rewind a little bit about the genesis and the evolution of this new funding structure for community colleges.
Well, Bill, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about House Bill 8. It is a transformative model for community college funding. And as you said, this has been going on for the preparation for this for quite some time. Last session, the 87th session, the legislature passed a bill that created the Texas Commission on Community College Finance. And the reason I mention that is because that was the start of what became eventually House Bill 8 in this 88th session. So what that commission was tasked with doing was basically studying all aspects of community college funding, not only in Texas but around the state, and making recommendations to the legislature to update and change how Texas funds community colleges. And they made those recommendations, and the main recommendation centered around how state funding is allocated. So currently, just broad information, community colleges are funded in three main ways. You have your state appropriations, your tuition and fees, and your property taxes. When you look at the state appropriations, the state funding, and under the old model, that was broken down into three main buckets. The first one is what we call core operations, where each community college gets a set amount of money from the state just for being a community college. The second bucket was what we call contact hours, the number of hours a student is in a chair in a classroom. And then the final one was what we call success points, and there were several metrics involved there. Think about graduation, taking 15 hours, taking 30 hours, transferring to a four-year university, those sort of things. Those were success point metrics, so the better the student did, the more outcome-based funding you received. Under the old model of those three buckets, the contact hours was the majority of funding from the state for community colleges. And I tell you that background to say that the main recommendation from the commission was to change that from a majority contact hour funding to a majority outcome-based funding. And so what that means is, the majority would be coming from those success point metrics, so the better your students did, the more state funding you received. Ultimately, that recommendation was made to the legislature by the commission, and House Bill 8 was born. And the main thing that House Bill 8 does, it does other things, but the main thing House Bill 8 does is it changes state funding to a majority outcomes-based funding model. Now, several changes occurred there. Under the old model, there were 11 success points, and I mentioned some graduation, transfer, 15 hours, 30 hours, those sort of things. Under House Bill 8, they have shrunk that down from 11 success point metrics to 3. And so there are 3 success point metrics going forward for state funding. The first one is getting awarded what's called a credential of value, which is a term defined by the coordinating board. But think graduation, think workforce certificates, those sort of things, credential of value. The second one is the number of students who earn 15 semester credit hours and also transfer to a four-year university. So it's no longer just getting 15 hours. It's getting 15 hours and then transferring to a four-year university. And then the final one is the number of students who earn 15 semester credit hours in dual credit. So those are the 3 new metrics under House Bill 8.
Wow, an actual example of government getting simpler? Going from 11 to 3?
I don't know if we're going to go that far, Bill. Let's not get too far over our skis.
but I would think
they've definitely reduced it down, that's for sure.
Well, and I would think it's easier for Blinn and all other community colleges to be able to project what their state funding might be, having to deal with only 3 components versus 11.
That is correct. And it really focuses in what you're aiming at in your state funding, and really pares that down to here are the three items that the state has deemed these are the important items, and really that's where our focus and is going to be.
Because Blinn had to work on its fiscal year 24 budget before knowing for sure what the outcome was going to be of HB8, how does things shake down now that y'all know that HB8 has been signed from a budgetary standpoint at Blinn?
It's been interesting, Bill. I will say that, and you know, all 50 community colleges, fortunately, were in the same boat, so we weren't alone, thankfully. But yeah, we have to set our budget based on not having House Bill 8 finished. I mean, that was basically the whole budget preparation. So it was a bit of a challenge. So this is what we did. I can't speak to other colleges. The state did obviously publish their budget back at the beginning of session. And that budget, including the community college portion of the budget, was based on the old funding model because we didn't know if House Bill 8 was going to pass or not at that point. So we based our budget on what was printed in the state budget, the original state budget, and that's how we used that because we say at the very least we're going to get this amount of money, and that's what we use to then plug into our budget. Now, even further complicated, Bill, it gets even more fun. Throughout House Bill 8, it asks the coordinating board, it directs the coordinating board, I should say, to define a lot of the terms that are in House Bill 8. So the rulemaking process will be going on this summer with the coordinating board, and that's really where a lot of the definitions and terms come out of. So even today, Bill, we do not have financial analysis to say how much money Blinn or any other community college will be receiving under the new funding model because the coordinating board has not defined the rules yet. And even further, this comes into effect right away. So beginning September 1st, of 23, that is the new funding model. And so we're all kind of going out on a limb here and saying, okay, Blinn does well with success points, outcome-based funding model historically we have. We're going out on a limb here and saying we think we're going to do well under this model as well, but we don't have the final dollar figures about what Blinn will be receiving in state funding this coming fiscal year, which is unheard of. I've never seen a budget cycle like this before. So it's been a challenge, Bill, but you know, we've done well with success points in the past. I think we're going to continue to do well under this new model.
In addition, in my following Blinn, now going into my 14th year, Blinn's administration and Blinn's trustees have historically been conservative from a budget standpoint, and I expect that to take place here in fiscal year 24.
That's exactly right, and that's why we went with the amounts that were stated in the initial budget printed by the state, because we knew that we were going to have at least that much money, and if we use that as a backstop, that's a conservative way to build a budget that, as you said, fiscally conservative, but also we had some information from the state on the minimum that we would receive.
And the other thing I want to back up to your observation that you've never seen this set of circumstances before, I think it's worth noting for those who are not familiar that you've had time in the legislature as a state representative, so you have a little more insight on multiple levels.
I do, and you know, I think you mentioned it correctly. I did serve time as a state representative. Sometimes it feels like serving time. So yes, I've been obviously involved in intimately involved in several state budgets, and like I said, this is a unique setup here, timing wise that I've never seen before, where asking colleges to base their budgets on items that are unknown.
Is there anything else that listeners and those more closely associated with Blinn and community colleges need to know about how this funding structure does get implemented? I guess the big thing right now is waiting on what the coordinating board decides.
That's exactly right. What we're hearing from the coordinating board is hopefully towards the end of July, early August, they'll be wrapping up their rulemaking process. So we're watching that, and obviously all community colleges are involved in that. So I'm hoping by August, middle of August or so, we'll have some finality, and then we can have those financial analysis that come out and say this is what each community college will be receiving. So busy summer, no rest after the session. We get right into the rulemaking process and make sure this is all ironed out through August.
Well, and again, I want to emphasize something you also said earlier, that Blinn historically, and you've shared this with the trustees, the components that now make up HB8, those are components that Blinn has done well in, and that's also something that needs to be pointed out as a reflection of how effective an education at Blinn is.
Bill, you're exactly right. And here's a great example. So that second metric I mentioned was 15 semester credit hours and transferring to a four-year. Blinn is obviously the leader in the state in community colleges and transfers. The statewide average for community college transfers to 4 years is roughly about 25 or 26% statewide average. Blinn has about a 44% transfer rate. So that means 44% of our students transfer from Blinn to another four-year. So we almost doubled the statewide average in transfers, which is really one of our highlights. And so that's just a great example of how Blinn, the excellence that Blinn has, really plays well into these metrics that are being defined by the state.
And the stereotype is that Blinn transfers go to Texas A&M, and that's definitely not totally true, considering all the joint agreements that you have, not only with the institutions in your relationship at Rellis, but also with institutions that are elsewhere around the state.
Exactly right, Bill. We want to make sure we have a full menu of options for our students. A&M obviously is a vital partner for Blinn, but we have agreements with Sam Houston and Texas State, and I could go on and on and on about the agreements we have across the state with other four-year institutions that we can be a feeder, if you will, to all the four-year institutions in the state as well.